These words from the 12th chapter of Exodus, coming after a very long and lengthy description of how henceforth we should celebrate the Passover, celebrate the day where our lives were saved. The Lord said to Moses, "This day shall be for you a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall observe it as an ordinance forever." This day where we remember how and why our lives were saved, you shall keep it in memory. I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, I switched over from Microsoft technology to Apple technology, and that has solved some problems and creates others, just like any such thing. But my little Apple MacBook has a button on the bottom left that's called a finder. And I can find, almost instantly, anything that's in the computer's memory. How slick is that? I was looking for something just really arcane the other day, and I needed to find an address because I couldn't remember it. But what I could remember was the post office box, and that was enough. All I do is type in the post office box, and the document that had that address in it just popped right up, and wow, it's all in memory, which works a lot better than what's all in memory up here. We may have become overly reliant on what is in memory in our machines as opposed to what we hold in our memories. And yet, what we hold in memory is as profound as anything we know. We hold in memory, well, many things. Some things that are difficult to hold in memory that come back to us at inopportune or maybe even unpleasant times. I saw a news piece this week where several colleges now, and when it happens to one or two or several, it will happen to all of them eventually, coming out of provost's offices and places that direct the way college professors do things, is a suggestion or a directive to give what are called trigger warnings to some of what you teach, that this discussion of warfare, among other things, might be a triggering event to unpleasant memories or even post-traumatic stress, and you should warn people about that. Now, there are all manners of ways to debate that, but I understand it. I, in fact, have something in my freshman sociology course, it's a video, which is extraordinarily provocative. It's a content analysis of music video and the study of gender and violence. And in fact, I tell the students, this is going to disturb you. And if it doesn't, you need to think about why it doesn't, because it's extraordinarily disturbing. And if you have ever been involved with any level of an abusive relationship, much less something like date rape or something like that, this will hit you between the eyes. And so there's a trigger warning there. Well, some of those memories that just hit us at times we don't expect create levels of post-traumatic stress. We had lunch with a couple this week who learned within the last couple of weeks that their adult daughter, middle-aged woman, is irretrievably ill. And maybe not this week or this month, but sooner than later, they will outlive their child. It's not supposed to work that way. But it does. I am the step-parent of 3 adult children, and the thought of it is unimaginable. And yet, we all know people for whom that's true. In fact, Minnie Williams, God love her, did it twice. She didn't ever get over it. No one ever does. But she learned to persevere through it by living and being loved in the company of others. In the company of others who may not have fully understood that, but we've all understood loss. We have all experienced post-traumatic stress in some way. And clearly, every moment of Minnie's life subsequent to Brian's death was subject to having all of those memories triggered by anyone's death. I mean, that's a common experience. This is coming out in colleges and universities now because almost all of us, and this is certainly true in my case, we are now having students coming back who've been to and have come back from Afghanistan, and some of these triggering issues create and recreate some of that stress. And for all of the bad press the VA has been getting lately, they deal with and understand post-traumatic stress better than anybody, because nobody knows how to deal with it than someone who's been there. And that's how we not get over, that's how we persevere for all of these things in memory. Someone who's been there takes your hand and holds you as you go through it. It's all in memory, and this day shall be for you a memorial day, even to the triggers of post-traumatic stress. But that's not all. The other side of the same coin that is a trigger is what some psychologists call an anchor. Not all of the memories that suddenly come flooding back to us are unpleasant. Walk past a bakery, and suddenly it's your fifth birthday party. That's cool. Suddenly you're in a store and a piece of music. Oh, that was our song. And I don't mean the our song of the love of your life right now. I mean the our song of the first person who you ever thought loved you like 20 relationships ago when you were in ninth grade. It's right there. These are anchors to what give us hope. Anchors to what give us strength. One of the best-selling items in Lubbock, Texas over the last couple of weeks have been diploma frames. I did this. I accomplished this. And you can trade on your accomplishments when you find yourself feeling less than skilled. I'm in a bit of a slump academically right now. I got to get some stuff written that's been sitting on my desk for a while, and it's slow in coming. Something interesting happened to me this week. I was trained by and went to school at Purdue by one of the best medical sociologists in the world. And he wrote me a note a week or so ago and said, would you mind reviewing for me this article I'm writing with a grad student? I want you to have a look at it before I send it to a journal. I'm going, okay, I'll try, but I'm not much of a scholar right now. Well, I gave it a look, and because I had already told this guy, because he has such an influence in my life, that if he ever asks me to do anything, it becomes first on my to-do list, and it did. I got it out. I got it back to him within a day. And he wrote me this wonderful thank you note back. He said, not only did you do this quickly, but you really hit it. He said, you were spot on, were his words. There was a hole in that article, and I found it, and I gave him some advice on how to plug it. It kind of felt like Derek Jeter thanked me for a batting tip. And as a result, I wrote another couple pieces of research. I mean, you trade on this stuff. You don't always get it wrong. You get it right more often than you remember until you do remember it. And it becomes an anchor to what gives you hope. It becomes an anchor to what you know you can do. And there's a little trick. You can actually dial this into your head. You can take your thumb and forefinger and close your eyes and call into memory the best day of your life, whether you were the most successful day of your life, the most pleasurable day of your life, and take it through all of your senses. What did it look like? What did it feel like? What did it smell like? And every time you answer that question, put your fingers together and feel the touch. What did it look like? Oh, it was a sunset over the Pacific at Malibu. Got it. What did it feel like? What did it taste like? What did it? And every time. And then, anytime you need a boost, you need a lift. You got that anchor in your head. All you gotta do is touch your fingers and it comes right back. All those feelings are right there. They are all in memory. It's all in memory. The things that give us hope. The things that give us strength. The things that remind us we don't always get it wrong. In fact, we get it right more often than we think about. It's all in memory. Post-traumatic stress, peace, hope, and accomplishment. And one thing more. It, by and large, all revolves around the people. You know, the people that have taught us. You know, the guy that sent me the article, one of my best teachers. The people who've shown us the way to live well, to have fun. And maybe most importantly, the people who showed us how to live with honor. Some of you know, this is a nine iron. It's a very old nine iron. It belonged to my grandmother, who taught me to play golf first when I was about 9 years old, many years ago. This was her nine iron. She called it her scoring club. I remember one time I was going to go play golf and I didn't have a nine iron, so I asked if I could borrow this one. And she said, sure, because she always said sure when I asked her something. That's who she was. Borrowed the nine iron, played well, and didn't get it back in her golf bag the next time she needed it, and I heard about that. But the quintessential story of this golf club and this woman who taught me not just about golf, but about life and about honor, story that happened before I was born, story she told me when she was teaching me to play golf. She was playing in match play, and I don't want to get all arcane about the rules of golf, but you'll get this. She was match playing for the club championship, finals, just two of them left, playing against a woman she didn't much like very well for all kinds of reasons. But anyway, they get to the last hole, they're all square. The match is even. The last hole is a par three. They both miss their tee shots. Her opponent hits it short, and my grandmother hits it into a hazard on the right side of the green. So my grandmother's closer to the pin, so the other woman has to hit first. The other woman makes the shot of her life and hits the ball this close to the cup. So my grandmother concedes the putt. The woman has parred the hole. She's lying in a hazard, having to get it out and in the hole just to tie. Well, she takes this club, probably says a prayer, knocks it into the cup for a two. Except, just before she took her backswing, the base of the club struck the ground, and according to the rules of golf, that's technically grounding your club in a hazard and a two-stroke penalty. Nobody saw it. Nobody knew it except her. And she called the penalty on herself and conceded the match and lost. That is honor. She's not the only one that teaches us what honor is about. And on Memorial Day, it is certainly the case that those who have donned a uniform put themselves between us and harm to secure our way of life showed us something to be grateful for. They gave us an example of how to live our lives to honor their teaching, to honor their sacrifice. If nothing else, if that informs our ministry, our life together, our relationships, we will leave this day better than we found it in any day subsequent. And on the subject of this day, which shall be for you a memorial day, it is Sunday. And even the Sundays in Lent are anniversaries of Easter. Every Sunday is an anniversary of the day on which our Lord emerged from the tomb and said, "I forgive you." Our forgiveness, our love is secured this day and for all time. And every Sunday is a memorial day that you shall keep for generations. It's the day your lives, our lives, were saved eternally. It's all in memory. Amen.